Getting good at the art of starting without starting is great.
I'd like to welcome Mike Pacchione to the Productivityist Podcast. Mike, thanks for joining me today.
Mike Vardy, I've been dreaming of this.
Really? You know what? We met at South by Southwest years ago. After a panel discussion that I did with Mark and Angel Sharonoff, who've been on the show, who will be listed in the show notes, and Craig Jarrow, the time management ninja, who we share a publisher now, which is kind of cool. And it was one of those things where we kind of crossed paths. We ended up having dinner together, which was kind of cool. And it was, I think, my first time in Austin. So my first time in Austin was like doing this talk, meeting some, and we're talking like, this is like six years ago at this point, right? Five years?
I think this is like 2012 probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was it wouldn't have been, because I would turn 40. So I would have been, only about 6 years ago now as we're recording this. But the reason that this episode is going to be largely more for me, I would say, is because, I have the ability to improv. I have an improv training background. And one of the things that I've struggled with is the crafting of a talk in a way that taking the proper amount of time to craft a presentation, because I've used those improvisational skills as I won't say crutch, but as taking them for granted and saying, well, because I can improv, I can nail a talk. I want it right out of the gate. Why is that assumption absolutely incorrect?
Because you have an improv background, you will do better than most people who quote unquote wing it. Almost everybody. You'll do better than almost everybody when they wing it. But the problem is almost nobody does well winging it. So even with an improv background, I always tell people, like, stand-up comedians are the very best in public, at least the good stand-up comedians are the very best in public speaking. Well, think of what a stand-up comedian does. Chris Rock, Seinfeld, like, name your favorite person. They have 1,000 takes before the one that you see. And they figured out, like, the exact wording. And they figured out the pauses. And they figured out when they need to walk and when they need to interact with the audience. Like, they figured all that stuff out so that it appears natural in the moment. People with improv backgrounds can do a pretty good job of never embarrassing themselves. But they miss out on giving the very best speech that they could give.
Yeah, one of the things that I've always felt, and I think that presenters, this is not unusual for anyone, but you're always going to be your own worst critic. And that's one of the things I've always felt. It's like, you know, in instances where I haven't done enough preparation, that I've always felt, oh, I could have done that so much better if only I had taken the time to do this X, Y, Z. And you're right, like, improv is the genesis of sketch, right? So if sketch comedians, they take something that they've improvised, go, okay, we need to fine tune it. We need to write it. We need to create, because one of the things that, and you and I've talked about this before, is, you know, I can ramble, because that's what improvisers can do, is they get on a tangent and they can go. So if someone was going to craft a presentation, whether it's like a big speech and you know, you work with people that do this stuff. You worked with, not too long ago, you worked with Amy Porterfield. You know, I mean, you've worked
with her again right now.
Right. Yeah. So there's lots of, I mean, you've worked with some pretty incredible people putting on pretty incredible presentations. When someone is thinking about putting on a presentation, whether it's for a big main stage or just, hey, we're going to do it in front of the office and it's a small presentation.
Yeah.
What are the steps? Like, how much time should they consider taking into account when they're putting something together like that?
Yeah, and my answer for you really depends on how perfectionist you want to be about it, because there is the other side of that, which is tightening up a little thing on a slide that nobody's going to see, right? There's that, but that happens less frequently than the, well, this is good enough version. Mm-hmm. What most people do is, here are some bullets, and they tell me, oh, no, I'm good off script. That's what everybody says. But what they really mean is, I have less anxiety off script. And the reason why they have less anxiety off script is because there's nothing to judge them against. So there's,
true.
There's nothing for the teacher to be circling in the back of the room because there's no script.
Right.
That's what they mean. The time it takes to plan a talk, like, here's what I will say. For a talk that matters, I mean, like, you could win a lot of business, or prestige could really build. 0 to 60, that's 10 hours probably. Mm-hmm. I went back and looked. I worked with Pat Flynn years ago, and the number Pat and I had 21 phone calls about a talk that he gave at, I think it was Blog World.
Yeah, he's notorious for rehearsing. Notorious.
Yeah. Now, I think both of us have gotten more efficient with it.
Sure.
But, like, that just gives you an idea. If the talk matters, you should put time into it.
Mm-hmm.
My starting point, so it's tricky, Mike, because especially people like you and me who, we always want to fast forward to, like, oh, how can I make this funny? Or, like, how can I make this creative? And it's great to have those things. Like, those are the things that make the speech memorable to your audience. But the starting point really needs to be, in one sentence, what am I trying to accomplish? Like, let me summarize this whole thing in a sentence. That's your starting point. And by the way, that sometimes takes, like, 2 hours to figure out. Sometimes it's day three, and you realize, oh, you know what? I'm talking about the wrong thing. Like, I thought the speech was about thing A, but it's about thing B. Like, that happens a lot. But the starting point is always, in one sentence, figure out what this is about, and then start to brainstorm from there. Now, here's the great news. I'm saying, like, it should take 10 hours, but once you start getting good at it, and, like, once you're good at it and you have your own way of doing it, right? So your Mike Vardy way of doing it, your Mike Pacchione way of doing it, Mark Chernoff, Angel Chernoff way of doing it, then you can, like, once you have that system down, you can do it pretty quickly. For a talk that is of, let's say, medium importance to me, like, that can be 3 hours to me pretty easily, and probably even less. Because at this point, I figured out my system of, okay, figure it out, or boil it down to a sentence, brainstorm everything I might want to include. Then once I've got it brainstormed and I start sorting it out, then it's like, okay, now let's make this creative. And that doesn't have to take that long.
What got you into this? Like, what was the thing that kind of said, hey, because there's a lot of people who wanted, like, who, first off, there's a lot of people who, like, this is their number one fear, public speaking. So they're like, yeah, there's no way I'm going to do this. But then there's someone like you. Yeah, there's someone like you who's like, let me lean in. I'm not just going to do my own talks. I'm going to help other people with this. What was the fascination with you, for you, about this kind of, because this is what you do now. This is, and it's what you've done before. You worked, you know, you, so what was the thing that kind of got you into say, I'm going to lean into this hard?
Yeah. First of all, I'm joking when I say weirdos. A lot of people are anxious about speaking.
It's the number one fear. They fear it more than death.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
That is not accurate, but I get it. The idea of being in front of people and them all looking at you, and it's not a two-way conversation, I get why that freaks people out. I think one of the reasons why that freaks people out is because they're expecting to look out at the audience. And knowing that, like, you put all this work into the presentation, they're expecting the audience to be sitting there with big smiles on their faces. It's not what audiences look like. I mean, maybe you make them laugh. Like, sure, that can happen. What do you look like when you're in an audience? Do you sit there with a big smile on your face when you're trying to learn something? That's not what people look like. But that freaks people out. Let me actually answer your question. Why did I lean in on this? Mike, I was so lucky that I found out that this was a thing you could do. So you said public speaking is the number one fear. The only time I ever had fear of public speaking was when I didn't prepare. So in my mind, that's not a fear of public speaking. That's a fear of being unprepared. So that's the same thing as I didn't study for the test.
Right.
I mean, that's not, don't blame that on public speaking. So from a sheer, like, scared of being in the front of the room, the only time I ever had fear is when I wasn't ready. Going back to third, fourth, fifth grade, we used to do current events in elementary school. I loved standing up. I couldn't understand, like, why would, this is, let's see, I was in fifth grade in, like, 1989, I think, and we had current events. Stand in the front of the room, say your current event, and then the class voted on whose they thought was the best. People would, and this is like you would cut out the newspaper article. People would read the newspaper article. I'm like, what are you doing? We can do that at home. I just didn't get that that's not the way most people think. Most people would rather not have the opportunity to put on a show at the front of the room. I got really lucky that, I mean, so communications is always the thing I was real interested in. That was my major in college. That was my grad school major. I loved teaching. I did not love grading. So I was adjuncting. I had a guy from Nike who came to one of my classes. Asked if I wanted to present at Nike sometime. So I'm a grad school student who's got like $327 in the bank, you know, like, okay, I can present at Nike if you want. And that was a key moment for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one is Nike. It's a big deal. It sounds really impressive to people. Number two, it was the first time that I ever felt, I didn't have fear, but I distinctly felt this, what am I supposed to be doing right now? Am I supposed to be, there's a spotlight on me, they're recording it in the back. Am I supposed to be entertaining people? Is this a stand-up show? So after that, I was at a point where I was really trying to figure out, what can I do with this? Is this something I, because to me, a motivational speaker was never an option, because I have all four limbs and life hasn't been that hard. So motivational speakers in my mind were people who really had overcome stuff.
And it's true that's always like, I know that there's been instances, and you've seen me do a talk once where I brought something up that I'd never brought up, and I haven't brought it up in a talk since. That was very personal. And I kind of glossed over it because it was like, okay, so who cares? Like I'm a white dude that has all my limbs and I'm middle class. I don't have a ton of hardships. So like sometimes you look for that, like, cause you see it in a lot of like, how can I relate to these people? And sometimes you make that mistake of like, okay, I need to have that thing, that tragic story or that thing that I've come back from. And it's like, if you need, in some cases, if you have that, I think that's great. Cause I think that there is some inspiration, motivation, but if you don't, I think it's a waste of time to look for that because that can become a crutch in and of itself as well, right?
1,000%, yeah. Yeah. So that said, I didn't know that at the time.
Sure, sure. So you're like, I can't be a motivational speaker.
Totally. To me, I'm like, well, both parents were around, like, can't do that. Haven't maxed out credit cards. What do I do? Long story a little bit shorter, I found this company, like, I mean, this is just a God smiling on me moment, but I found this company in Silicon Valley called Duarte that's like the best in the world at training people to give presentations. I was already good at it, and then being able to marry those things, I spent the next 7 years traveling the world helping people to present. And we're talking going to some of the biggest companies in the whole world. We're talking going to, I presented in places where they had to seize my phone when I went in the door, couldn't use my own laptop, like top secret type stuff. It was pretty awesome. And I think it's a pretty awesome responsibility. There are so many people out there with like these amazing ideas, and me being able to help them present it in a way that connects with people, that's a pretty awesome responsibility.
So we talked a little bit about how to, you know, the time that it could take to really develop. Yeah. But if someone wants to get started, like where they're like, I know I want to do this. Like where you said that talked about that one sentence, right? That one central idea. Where, like, are there best practices that you found that are like, okay, you've got this central idea to frame it up from that? Because a lot of people just say, okay, I'm going to put some slides together. And you know, bullet points like you've talked about. So like if someone's thinking about this and they want to feel prepared, but they don't want it. I mean, and I'll link to it in the show notes, a Sir Ken Robinson talk about like prepare, but just like don't over prepare, right? Because you've got to leave some room for, you know, to breathe and that kind of thing. So what are some of the things that you when you work with clients that you say, hey, okay, you've got your central idea. Now here's what you need to do.
Like what should they do next? Is that your question?
Yeah. Like what, like if they're like, I have this idea, I've distilled it down to that central point, but now I want to craft a talk out of it. And I don't want it to be like me just rambling or me making it so monotone. And I mean, I'll give you an example. I was watching, and actually coincidentally, I was watching on Netflix, The Grinder. Have you ever seen that show,
no,
The Grinder? It was Rob Lowe. One season. It was around for one season.
Oh,
Rob
man.
Lowe and Fred Savage.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. So Fred Savage.
It was too good for TV.
It was too good. But Fred Savage is like the lawyer, that character, but he has like index cards and he reads off of them because he can't, which, you know, in a court of law, if you're watching TV shows, it doesn't lend itself well to any kind of charismatic, you know, you can't convince the jury because you're reading off index cards. But meanwhile, Rob Lowe, who has no knowledge of law whatsoever other than what he learned on the television show he was on, but he had all this charisma. And of course, the way that law shows were portrayed on TV, people like, oh, they leaned in and they're like, well, tell us more. And he's and the guy's like, he's not a lawyer. Like, what do you do? Like, so there's this war. So how do they find that balance between being the Fred Savage character of like, I know my stuff, but I don't want to be so monotone and not convincing, and the Rob Lowe character who's super convincing, but has no, like,
when no you, substance
it's at all, all, it's all sizzle and no steak.
Yeah. Yeah. my suggestion. Okay. So one of the most common questions that people ask is, should you memorize your talk? And I say, no, but you should script it.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean, so scripting it will enable you to streamline what you're saying. It'll make things tighter. But if you put all this pressure on yourself to memorize it word for word, you will be the Fred Savage character.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be up there totally worried. Oh my gosh, I left that word out. Da, 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 and the audience has no idea. They don't know what your script was.
Yep.
So we're always trying to guard against rambling. We're always trying to guard against having no charisma. That's why I tell people, script the speech, but don't memorize it. So script it. When you write it down, that should like translate in your head. Or sorry, when you write it down, that should stick in your head to an extent. And then start practicing it out loud. The best thing to do is to practice it enough that you basically created a keyboard shortcut, but for, I don't know, for your tongue? That sounds weird.
No, but that makes sense. I get it. Yeah. I get it. Yeah, like it's a macro. Like you've got this macro. It's like, okay, I know what this is. And now I can play with it a bit.
Yeah. I mean, you and I have both said certain sentences or made certain claims enough that it's like you start talking and you don't even have to consciously tell your brain to what words to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like it shoots out.
Yep.
It's like auto text. And that's a, like, listen, you can't do that for every single talk, but for one that matters, signature talk, those lines that matter, being able to deliver them like that, that does a world of good for you.
All right. So I want to do more talks. I'm getting ready to, you know, my book's coming out in
Mike Vardy book tour.
Yep. So there'll be a lot of that going on. I'll be doing more presentations. I'm doing more YouTube videos too, which also requires some sense of presentation and stuff. And I mean, again, it's that improv background that I've struggled so hard against to fight because I know I can do it, but yeah, there's also that preparation of scripting and such. So, is there such a thing as, I think I know the answer to this, but for those listening, they may not know, like, is there such a thing as too many talks? Because I think you want to send so many messages. Like when you're working with somebody, you're like, okay, you have your signature talk.
Yeah.
Is there a certain amount that you should say, okay, these are the talks that I do and then that's it? Or, you know, you could do a bunch of talks on different topics. Like where do you kind of say, okay, like hone in a bit? Because I mean, my thought is Jack of all trades, master of none can
totally
become the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you'll end up finding is that stories from talk one can fit into talk two.
Right.
And talk three. But to your point, there is a max number of talks. Well, let me say that differently. If you were going to try to market a number of different talks, that's going to be tricky. I would give yourself three options. Three is a little bit arbitrary. Maybe you can go four, maybe five. Probably three is a good number. This is the same thing as any other decision you make. When there's a bunch of options, it's confusing to the audience, whether that's looking at the website, whether it's talking on the phone. So you can have more than one, but I wouldn't have too many.
We'll get back to my conversation with Mike Pacchione, where we talk about whether or not he recommends people eat before they go on stage, and also what advice he gives to people when they know they have a talk that's at a time that's not the most convenient. But right now I want to talk about something that can't always be terribly convenient, but it's something that you really need to work on, and that's your fitness. Well, if you're anything like me, you've spent a lot of time trying out different fitness routines. No matter what I tried, I always felt like the workouts were too generic and didn't address my personal needs. I wanted my exercises to fit me and my goals, but I didn't want to spend the money for an expensive personal trainer. And that's when I decided to give Training with Future a try. Now, I've been using Future for the past few weeks now, and I have to say that I love the connection that I have with my personal trainer. Walking me through the entire journey that I'm taking with my fitness is really, really powerful. The workouts are programmed for me every Sunday, so I know when I'm supposed to do something. And there's also some flexibility within there as well. I've been a bit under the weather, and my trainer basically modified the workouts so that way it would work for me, but I wouldn't be too stagnant during my time where I wasn't feeling 100%. What Future does is pairs you up with one of their world-class trainers and coaches that create your personalized workout plan tailored specifically to your schedule, your routine, your goals, and your progress. Your coach checks in with you daily, which is absolutely awesome, to keep you on track, sending you texts, making adjustments to your routine, and following your progress logged on your Apple Watch. And if you don't have an Apple Watch, that's no problem. When you sign up to train with Future, they send you everything you need, including an Apple Watch. So don't overpay for a trainer. Get the workouts you need to meet all your fitness goals and take your trainer with you wherever you go with Future. I'm going to Portland this weekend. My trainer's coming along with me. When I'm doing the Big Ready in Vancouver, guess who's coming along with me? My trainer. I want you to sign up for Future today. And when you do, go to future.com/timecrafting. You'll get your first 2 weeks with your personal trainer for just $1. That's $1. That's tryfuture.com/timecrafting for 2 weeks for only $1. Try Future by going to future.com/timecrafting today. When running a business, HR issues can kill you, whether it's wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, all that stuff. It can be really overwhelming when you're running a small business. And HR manager salaries aren't cheap, an average of $70,000 a year. Well, Bambee, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager. You can craft HR policy and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. And with Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. And from onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. It's month to month, there's no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambee help and get your free HR audit today. I have to say, as my business is growing, I would love to be able to use a service like Bambee. I'm in Canada, I can't. That's the unfortunate reality of the situation. Where I'm based, I just can't use it. But if I could, I totally would, and now you can too. Go to Bambee.com/timecrafting right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambee.com/timecrafting. Now remember, Bambee is spelled B-A-M to the B-E-E .com/timecrafting. That's where you need to go. So Bambee.com/timecrafting. Get that free HR audit now. Well, I'd love for you to subscribe to this podcast, which you can do in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you are listening to podcasts. I also love to recommend a podcast regularly every single week. And this week, my pick of the week, my productivity is podcast pick of the week, is Rework. It's a podcast by Basecamp about the better way to work and run your business. I've been listening to it off and on for a long time now, but more recently because they're short. I mean, the latest episode that I'm looking at right now, which is called Try Everything, it's under 40 minutes. So if you want to get your daily dose of how to run your business and receive some unconventional wisdom from Basecamp's co-founders and other business owners, check out Rework. It's my productivity is podcast pick of the week. Now let's get back to my conversation with Mike Pacchione here on the Productivity is podcast.
All right. I want to shift gears a bit and talk about you and the shift away from, because now you're on your own.
I'm on my own.
And you also have a new set of circumstances in your home. Some people call that a child, but I have two sets of circumstances. You have one. How are you able to, as a new parent, and a new and running your own business, really newly running your own business?
Yeah.
How are you able to? How are you constructing your time around that? Because you have to. And, I mean, you're like, I don't know. Like, you can come back with I don't know because you know there are winging it. Is probably this is where the winging it part might come into play. But how are you, like, what approach are you taking? Because now that you've got your own business and you're taking your expertise, but you've got this, you know, your family life, I think, how are you making those things or trying to make those things work?
I feel like you would be so proud of me for actually having a plan, because that is so. There was as of 5 years ago, there was single Mike who had just unlimited time. I mean, he had a girlfriend, but that was two or three nights a week. Mike could putz around all day and just make up for it 11 at night. No big deal. Then there was married Mike, had less hours. Mike with child. Ooh.
No hours.
It's a thing.
Yep.
I drop Jess off at 7:45, drop Luca off at the nanny at 8, pick Jess up at 4:40, or pick Luca up at 4:45, pick Jess up at 5. There is no time outside of that. So everything has to squish in there. Working out, any reading I want to do, anything at all that's not related to raising a child has to be done during those hours. I have found through like some of your work, reading Daniel Pink, I have realized that the morning is the part that I need to treat as sacred. Like the 8 to 11 hours. And this is consistent with when I had an office job. The days that I would get into work early, I would get more done by like 10 o'clock than the rest of the day. Like, why was I there for the rest of the day?
Right.
Because you had to look like you were there. Mike, I have found that I can do great creative work 8 to 11. Some interruption in there. And all of my email, talking on the phone, that stuff should happen in the afternoon.
Well, and I think if I remember correctly, Amy has the same, like Amy says, she's got her untouchable time in the morning. I think it's in the morning, right? The afternoon, she helps whatever her people need, but in the morning, it's all for her too, right? So that's, I think now, interestingly for me, and we were talking about this before we jumped on the call, is that my mornings have been basically taken up by everybody else. But the afternoon for me is when I'm woken up and at my best. So I think that the understanding where that structure is really, really important, because if you don't, then yeah, you're going to be at the mercy of and at the whims of wherever your mind is going to take you.
Totally. And I mean, like I used to start the day off like a lot of people probably do. Okay, let me check Gmail. Oh, let's see what's on ESPN.com. Did anybody post anything interesting on Facebook? That's what everybody does. But that's giving away the best thinking that I do. So now I don't get rid of it. I mean, I'd love to be like, oh, I never go on Facebook. I never read sports articles. No, but I punt it to the afternoon. Way better.
Right.
Way better for me.
So what does a typical Mike day look like at this point? Because, I mean, it's different now because you've got – because before you were told where to be. But now you're directing yourself with the knowledge of the fact that if you didn't, then you would be told where to be by circumstance.
Yeah. First of all, when our child starts sleeping in a little longer, I'd love to be able to get up at 5 or 6 to work out. Like, that would be a great addition to the schedule. But right now I'm getting up at 5:58 and 6:09 and 6:11 and 6:18. That's actually what it was this morning.
Wow.
Like, are you kidding? How long has it been? 2 minutes. Now I forgot your question. Oh, what does an actual day look
What's
like?
What's a typical day at this point look like?
Yeah. So I get home about 8:05, 8:10 in the morning. I immediately will start brainstorming on someone's speech that I am helping with. So like Amy Porterfield's talk when we're recording this is I think 3 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like fine tuning that right now. Like that's how I started my day today. Somewhere around 10 o'clock, I need a break. So that's usually walking the dog. Today I actually ran with the dog. Most people know this. Exercise helps you think better, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So it's good to get exercise when the rain doesn't screw things up for me. I live in Portland.
Yeah, I hear you. I went for a run yesterday, and because the sun was out. And as soon as if the sun is out on a day, you're like, got to get outside because this could be the only day for like the next 3 weeks where I can get
That's
outside.
Such a variable. Yeah,
it is. It's I'm like, I have a workout that I do at home. And I'll actually link to it in the show notes because it's just like I joined a gym, and this is important as someone who does talks as well, because it's great for me to be a productivity person, go up on stage and talk about it. We'll come back to we'll get back to like the afternoon part of your day in a minute here in the night. But if I'm on stage saying, hey, you need to do this to be more productive, and I look like I'm overweight and not taking care of myself, people are going to be like, this is what you're saying I hear, but I'm looking at you going, oh, you know, but so. I was flipping around in Flipboard. Which is what you do. And Sterling K. Brown from This Is Us had a workout on there. And I'm like, oh, he's in pretty good shape. So let me see what, and it's like a no gym workout. I'm like, okay, great. I have a membership to a gym, but if it's raining, I may not go to the gym because, so I need to have something I can do at home. So every day, like I have this workout time scheduled. My workday will end at 2:00. Because I have to pick up my son by 2:45. So I have from 2:15 to 2:45, I have a window where I'm going to work out. Now that window could be, I'm going to go for a run. And if it's sunny, I will go for a run. But if it's not, then I will do this, what he calls this pyramid workout, which is 50 jumping jacks,
40
squats, 30 push-ups, 20 butt-ups, and then 10 burpees. And you're supposed to do that 3 times. I can't do those 3 times right now. But it's just to, I think right now I'm only, as of this recording, I'm only doing it at one set. Like I can only do one because my body is not ready for that yet. But it's something. And I think that that's the key, right? Like you, and yesterday when I went for the run, when it was sunny, two ideas came to mind for things I want to write about and talk about. So I have on my Apple Watch, I have the watch face that has drafts. So I touch the drafts thing and I can record saying, you know, instead of evading your to-do list, invade your to-do list. And that might turn out to be nothing at all. But I'm like, and the reason that came to mind is I was listening to a song and the word evade came up and I'm like, oh, that's like different than avoid. It's evading is like, I'm like, I will look into that and do all that stuff. I wouldn't have thought about that or even had that thought come to mind unless I was running.
I am so glad you brought that up. So I'm doing a project for Don Miller right now too. So that's like afternoon.
Sure.
That's a reading thing. Reading I can do in the afternoon.
Gotcha.
I was asking Don when he first brought me on to do this thing. He's like, or I asked him, I'm like, how long do you think it will take? And he gave me he was like, it's 40 hours of actual work. So notice it's not 40 hours. 40 hours of actual work, he said. But I know you have to take the dog for a walk. You've got to hop in the shower. Those are where ideas come from.
Mm-hmm.
Ideas don't come to you when you're watching the cursor on Microsoft Word or Evernote or whatever you're using.
Nope. Jamie Masters actually sent me a year ago. She sent me the Aquanotes because they couldn't be shipped here to Canada.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have them in my shower upstairs. They're like right there. I'm like, if I'm in the shower, I'm like... There it goes. It's right down there. I used to, and I've talked about this before, when the kids were young, we had those soap crayons. So I would actually, like, they were like little soap crayons that they could use, but they would also write on the shower wall and stuff like that. Oh boy, I had to clean the shower a few times. So I'm like, let me grab one of those. I had an idea. And I'd write it down on the shower. I'd have to wet the wall in case it wasn't wet enough. I'm like, all right, like, do this. And my wife's like, I clearly see that you're doing something here because look at this thing that you're.
It's like all red.
It's all red or blue or whatever color I managed to grab because I'm like blind. I'm like, oh, just grab this one. But yeah, like, you're right. Like, when I'm. That's why having drafts on my watch is important because I can touch it. Like, it needs to be quickly accessible. Like, I'm looking at my Apple Watch right now, and the things that are on here are I have the time and the date. I have a 2-minute timer. So now that I'm doing YouTube videos, I want to be able to do a video in 2 minutes or less for certain ones. So I've got a timer on my watch. So that way, when the timer goes off, because Twitter, Sean McCabe was talking about this not too long ago. The shortest video you can have is 2 minutes and 20 seconds on Twitter. Where you can actually upload a video. That's the shortest? Something like that. But the point is that if I can make a video in 2 minutes, it's usable on all platforms. So at 2 minutes, it goes off if I'm just doing some random video and random talk and I haven't done a lot of prep for it. I can say, okay, well, I've recorded 2 minutes. My watch starts vibrating. I go, oh, I've only got 20 seconds to wrap this thing up. The other thing I have on here is the workout one, so I can tap it and immediately do whatever workout. I've got the Breathe app, so I can actually do some meditation, which is something that Apple has installed. And then I've got drafts. So all the things I need are right on this device.
So let me translate that for speaking, by the way, because you're talking about a lot of things that I actually recommend to people.
Cool. Bring it in.
I like Voxer for when I have good thoughts. So just record my thoughts on Voxer. You can do voice memo on your iPhone, whatever you want to use. But most of our thoughts are easier to transcribe as they're happening. Or not transcribe, but to record as they're happening. So Voxer's great for that. I always recommend working out before a big talk. Like, get that energy out of the way. Or sorry, let me rephrase that. Get the nervous energy out. Get the confident energy in.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be energetic when you hit the stage. It's going to be a lot easier if you've done a workout. And y'all, like... I have had situations where I am the most tired person in the world. Last U.S. election. Notice U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Last U.S. election. Fly to London. Find out Trump is president.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember we were actually chatting. I think we chatted that day, didn't we? Like, because I was flying, I think, that day, too.
Yes, totally. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. So fly to London. Find out Trump is president. Grab a shower in American Airlines lounge. Go to my hotel. Go to the client. Client says, we didn't get any of this stuff. So I have to photocopy. The 45 people at the workshop had to photocopy, I think, 80-page workbook for 45 people. Go to bed, can't sleep, wake up, deliver an 8-hour workshop with a Jackhammer right next door. So I'm doing this on 3 hours sleep.
Not fun.
You always though, when you are tired, a workout will help you.
Mm-hmm.
You just, most talks are 30 minutes, 45. That one happened to be 8 hours because it's a workshop, but that working out will help so much. And then breathing, what is it, the Breathe app that you use?
Yeah, yep.
Man, the reason why people have fear of public speaking is because they don't breathe. Or that's one of the reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So like, take note of the next person that you see is nervous. I guarantee you, this is the way that they will talk. They'll say, hey, I was talking to Mike Vardy about this project, and Mike is really good at productivity, and productivity is something that's really important to me. And like, can you hear how my voice is running out of air?
Yep.
It's because you're not breathing. Like, get in the art of taking nice, shallow breaths that will calm you down, and that will do a world of good for you as a speaker.
I think hydration is another big thing too, right? Like, I always have, so even though, and not coffee, when I'm doing a talk, like, or workshop even, it's water and tea.
Yeah.
So tea is really good because, especially like when I did Creative Live and I did some videos for other, is like the honey kind of tea, like the stuff that coats your throat.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I mean, if you're talking a lot, like, I mean, I remember when I did Creative Live and that was 3 days, like, I think it was like 8 hour days. So it ended up being like, you know, active talking of like 17 hours across the board. And they said they gave me honey tea on the stage and I had water and I would alternate. And I think that when you have that, I mean, obviously you have to time it because if you're doing a workshop, you're not going to be able to necessarily go to the bathroom. Like, you know, you want to time it in a way that everyone gets a bathroom break. You'll get a bathroom break at the same time. But the hydration part, I think, is really key, and tea is part of it. Coffee, no. Coffee is not going to work for me at that time.
Mike, so many people think they should do coffee, and it's a bad idea.
No, it's a diuretic.
Yeah.
It's a diuretic, and also it's the crash. Like, tea is that caffeine. It's the slow draw, right? Like, it's a slow draw, whereas coffee is like the big hit and then the drop, the big hit and then the drop. So you want to draw it out longer, right?
Yeah. I would add to that, it's good if the water, this is going to sound so nuanced, but it's good if the water is not ice cold.
No, room temperature. My wife's an acupuncturist, and she's like, "Don't I rarely drink cold water because the energy, and this is more for, you know, for Eastern medicine, but she says you want to keep the body warm, like the inside of your body warm. And if you're drinking cold water, it can actually affect you your vocal cords, number one.
Exactly.
Number one. But also, like, your body is then trying to bring the heat that it's into that area, which can actually cause some issues too. So even when I'm working out, like, it's warm, like room temperature water, like whatever it comes out of the tap, like that's when I'm drinking it, not ice cold.
That's really funny when you work out. Huh. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. I don't drink ice cold. I mean, I will, you know, occasionally drink cold water, like on a hot day, that's different because you want to cool yourself down. But if you're working out, like, you're generally if you're not generally trying to, you know, in fact, like when I go for a run, I'm rarely bringing water with me at all. Like, I'll go for a half hour run, come back and then drink water. Because I've done enough, you know, kind of, running where, like when I did an 8K race, they have the water breaks as you go, but I don't want to bring water with me because you don't need water constantly as you're running. You only need it at certain points. So that's why they have them timed in certain positions. Right. So, but yeah, the one thing, here's a question. This is actually, cause I'm someone who does eat before I perform. Like, when I go on, I'm not the type of, like, there's some people like, oh, I can't eat before I go on. I don't have to eat, but I'm not thrown off by eating. What do you recommend?
Mike, I don't know if I've had that question before. First thing that jumps to mind is what athletes do, which is they don't stuff themselves.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? That's my advice. Eat for sure. Here's what I'll say. I would often, so the workshop that I used to give at Duarte starts at 8 or 9, lunch typically at 12. I always thought I was pretty tired in the morning.
Mm.
Turns out I was just, I didn't have enough in my system.
You're just sluggish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe sluggish is the wrong word, but just, I felt like I was really, really reaching to find energy. And then I would have lunch and I'm like, oh. So, long way to say, eat enough, but don't stuff yourself. Stuffing yourself, I mean, frankly, at any stage of life except Thanksgiving or something. It's not actually
so,
helpful.
Actually, this lends itself to another really good question. So one of the things I don't like doing, and I mean, it's unavoidable sometimes, is being the speaker that's on right after lunch.
Ah, the worst.
So what recommendations do you have? Like, do you, like, obviously when you're constructing a talk, you're going to construct it based on that central idea, but knowing the timing of when your talk takes place is also critical too. So like what advice do you give people when they're, you know, constructing a talk, if they know that, hey, you know what, I'm on first thing in the morning, or I'm on, you know, oh God, I'm the first talk after lunch. Like what do you recommend?
Oh, I love this. Nobody asks these questions. Okay. First talk after lunch, it would be great if you could make that a bit more interactive. Mm-hmm. So figure out a way to get the audience talking, whether that's talking back to you, whether that's huddling with the neighbor, whether that is asking for a list of, hey, what do people struggle with here? Do something where they are involved, because that crash is natural.
And our friend Gary Ware is a great person to always have on after, because it's all about play. So he gets people up and going, and that's what his central idea is based around, that kind of stuff. So it fits in perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And that's a good point. His is literally having them move.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that can be a thing too. I mean, that's a great time to have people, again, this depends on the nature of the talk you're giving, mm-hmm. having people whiteboard on the side, having people draw. Those are all things that get you out of the churn of just listen, listen, listen. I've been listening. It's 2:00. I'm ready to crash.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What about first thing in the morning? Like, I mean, often, like I've done talks where I've been the opening and I've been the closing. So if we bring it to that point, whether it's you're doing like a workshop, so the entire presentation, whether it's you have an opening and a closing, you need to worry about that, or you're the opening speaker or the plenary or the closing speaker. Again, things to keep in mind for those.
Yeah. So for the opening, one of the things that's tricky with the opening, especially if you're presenting somewhere, I don't know, San Francisco, LA, Atlanta, one of those places where nobody can get anywhere on time because all the highways are blah, blah, blah. Getting good at the art of starting without starting is great. So what I mean by that, it's real easy for it to be 901, 902, 903, 907, 908. All the people aren't there yet. Are you going to wait forever for people to get there? What are you going to do? It's good to have a way of starting your talk that is not essential for everybody to hear, but doesn't make the people who are on time feel like they're being punished.
Yeah. So, I've always run into this problem because I'm a time management strategist. So one of the things I've opened with, which I always kind of worry about, is, well, I'm a time management person and it's now time, so I'm going to start, because, which is like, you know, people get that, but then there's also that, what that does, which I'm always worried about, which I don't know if I should be, is the people that show up late. Are they, is there some shame associated with that? So there's I always have that in my head too. So I haven't used it as often. I haven't made it like a signature thing, because I'm always worried that that's going to be something that you're going to immediately alienate part of the audience because you basically shamed them. But by the same token, you're the time management guy, and that's what you're there to talk about. So why in the world? I mean,
totally.
You know what I mean? So I think it's reading the room, for lack of a better term.
So with that, like what jumps to mind with that is the tone with which you deliver that is what makes or breaks that.
Right.
Because there's like the funny way of doing it that's warm, cordial. Mike Vardy feels like a friend.
Yeah.
Which I always tell people they should feel like the presenter is a friend. Mm-hmm. Or there's the mean version.
Yes.
It's 9:01.
Time
if
to
you
get
tried harder, you would be here.
Yeah,
you
know? exactly. So what about the closing? Because I think that the closing is also a very tricky place to be, because sometimes, and we've talked about this before, this is where improv and stand-up skills are really, really effective in my mind, because it's one of those things where you almost are like the ribbon that ties everything together, especially if it's a like a one-track kind of event.
Yeah. One thing I should have said about the opening, you're the first thing that they are hearing.
Right.
That's a huge advantage. Make it count. Mm-hmm. Don't make it like, well, man, how about that breakfast? Well, I like Starbucks, but they serve Pete's here. That's okay with me, right? Like that's, when I say start without starting, that's not what I mean. I mean, have a way of starting the talk that is on topic, but doesn't kill the audience if they miss.
Right.
So it's not the big reveal at the beginning. Okay. So ending the talk, a few things. I mean, you and I would both advocate for the idea of callbacks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So reminding them, and it doesn't have to be a big, do you remember yesterday at 2 o'clock, Mike Vardy said, it doesn't have to be that. It can just be stealing one of Mike Vardy's phrases.
Mm-hmm.
It can be referencing a joke, things like that. But callbacks are wonderful, especially at the end. again, I would tell you, like the opposite of the beginning, this is the very end. There's a lot of responsibility with that. Frankly, people will sometimes be tricked into thinking an entire conference was better or worse based on the last speaker.
Right.
It's the last thing they hear.
Yep.
So that also means if you're organizing a conference, choose that last speaker wisely. I would strongly encourage you, if you're the last speaker, have like this killer story to go out on. My favorite example of that was Seth Godin when he spoke at Craft and Commerce. I forget what year it was, but he has like this.
It was the first year. I wasn't there, but yeah. I heard great things about that talk.
He's like this awesome story about having to make an emergency landing in a different place. And I won't spoil it, but.
I think I can link to it in the show notes because I know ConvertKit's put them up. So I think I might be able to do that.
Yeah, I would link to that for sure. But it's just like the perfect ending. He's like, you are going to have a decision to make. Do you want to be the type of person that blames other people for things? Or do you want to be the type of person who makes decisions for themselves? And like, that's the end of the whole conference. Boom. I mean, that's just like a great, great way to go out. One other thing I will say about closing, whatever your time slot is, plan for it to go less. Frankly, I think that's a good idea in general, but especially when you are the last speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if this is a conference, they've been there since 9 o'clock the day before. Nobody complains about things ending early.
No. No, that's very true. That's very true. Mike, this has been awesome. I think that anyone who wants to learn how to present or is trying to put together talks there's a lot of great stuff in here. And if there's one piece of advice that you want to distill to someone who's like, okay, I'm ready. I've got this talk I'm going to be doing. I've got this workshop I'm going to be revealing. I've got this presentation. What's the most productive thing that they can do to get started now so that when they leave this conversation today, pretend you're ending the talk now. Pretend this is an event and you're ending it. They've got a decision to make. What is the one thing that they can do right now that's going to take them forward?
Okay, I want to give you two. One is going to be about the actual writing the talk. The other is going to be about making it good. Thing number one, to get started when you were writing the talk, I mentioned the thing about boiling everything down to one sentence. From there, brainstorm the heck out of your content. Write down like every last thing you can think of that would relate to to that central idea. And when I say write down every last thing, that could be statistics, that can be testimonials, that can be quotes, stories, case studies, anything like that. Write it all down and then take a walk, come back later on in the day, come back 2 days later, take a look with fresh eyes, and then try to think like your audience and say, okay, for the people that I'm delivering this to, what stuff in here? I always do it as post-it notes or as index cards.
Mm-hmm.
Which of these index cards are going to be the things that will help them the most? You're still going to have to go through and structure it and talk it out so it makes sense, but what stuff is going to help them the most?
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
With the index cards that don't help them or the post-it notes, do they toss them? Because I think some people would be like, what do I do with those ones that are ideas that I don't think will help? Because I think it's what do you think? Do you think it's more dangerous to hold on to them for a future talk? Or do you think it's just good to like, if it's that old idea, if you love something, let it go. And if it was always yours, it'll come back to you later kind of thing.
I would say put it in your back pocket, unless you're the type of person who can't let go of things in the back pocket, in which case go get rid of that darling.
Okay.
Murder that darling.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. What's the next? So the next thing.
Yeah. And then once you've got the talk all worked out, beta test the heck out of it. This is a little trick I learned from Josh Shipp. Do not let the first time that you're running through the whole thing be in front of an audience. Talk it out. Josh actually sends, I think I can talk about this. Josh will send an email to people that he trusts, and he says, okay, anonymous survey, tell me what was good. Tell me what you didn't like. Tell me anything that was confusing. Is there anything else I should know? And that's how he whittles things down. And that's why Josh Shipp, I mean, I know he Like, he was in Inc. magazine, cleared $2 million when you're speaking.
Yeah.
That's why, because he works at it and treats it like a software program. It's like version 1, 1.1, 1.2. Treat it that way.
Hey, yeah. Mike, this has been great. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
Mike Vardy, I have loved this. So miketalks.co. And on that site, like a lot of people, I have a newsletter. I love sending out tips to people. And I also have a great freebie for you, which is 7 stealth tips about presenting that they didn't teach you in business school. Because any Inc.com article or Fast Company, they're all like, adapt it to your audience, tell stories. And like that's true and it's good. I just wanted to give some tips that were less publicized. So go there, sign up. You can download that for free. And I must say, it is pretty doggone good.
Mike, thanks so much for joining me today on the Productivity
Podcast. Thanks, buddy. I love being here.